a great concept. It's very unique. I mean, I haven't been hearing about
I
this.
don't, yeah, it's, I don't think there's anything else like it,
No.
which makes it great, but it also makes it hard to explain. So, yeah.
Right. No, I get that. I mean, and I definitely have been, I feel like I'm like down the Megan Dom rabbit hole right now because I've been like in all your different wait, but let me introduce you. So here we are. So, hi, I'm Kim Drucker Stockwell with the Women's Survival Guide. And today we have Megan Dom with us, who is author of 6 books, has written for The Atlantic, for Vogue, probably 30 other magazines I didn't catch there. She has a podcast, 2 podcasts, one called The Unspeakable and the other called a Place in Hell.
A special place in
A
hell,
Special Place in
after the
Hell,
Madeleine Albright quote,
which I
right?
love, and that is with a woman who's like a generation younger, Sarah Hayter, and they kind of court controversy and they talk about it. But today, I did not bring her here to make everybody feel shitty about themselves that they haven't been doing anything with their
They
lives.
can do that on their own.
I can do that
You
on
don't
their own.
need to
I do.
contract out for that.
No, yeah, you don't need me for that. No, I'm here to make you feel good about yourselves. And Megan has a yet another business called the Unspeakeasy, which is a community of women, and it is only women. And I'm going to ask Megan to describe it from there.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me,
My
Kim.
pleasure.
I love talking about this stuff, and I'm excited that you have a community as well. So I think probably the easiest way to explain the Unspeakeasy is to just talk for a second about the origins of it. So I'm a writer, I've been a journalist and an essayist, and for 30 years I've written books, and I also teach writing a lot.
Oh, that's right.
I've taught, at Columbia and on the graduate level and elsewhere. And I also teach private workshops, generally in personal essay and memoir. And I have a lot of women coming into the class, by no means only women, but it's a lot of women, and they come in. And I've been doing this for years. And just around like 2019, right around there, I had published a book called The Problem with Everything, my journey through the new culture wars, which took on a lot of these polarizing issues and talked about generational divides within some of these topics. So anyway, but I was, my classes were not political or like dangerous in any way, but I was having a lot of women coming into the class, and it was like becoming clear that they didn't necessarily even want their pages workshopped. Like, we'd be workshopping somebody's piece, and they'd be like, "Oh yeah, whatever. I wrote this 10 years ago. I don't know. I just wanted to come to the class because I knew that this was a place where we could talk about these complicated issues, wh whether they had to do with gender or DEI stuff or climate or guns or abortion, anything. The topics that I cover." In my writing and then now on my podcast, they just wanted to be in a room where they knew that people were going to talk about this in a nuanced way. And I thought, wow, like, why are we even taking writing classes here? Like, why don't we just get together and talk about this stuff? And at the same time, there were a lot of podcast communities, places like Persuasion, the Fifth Column and Blogton Reported. And then, I started my podcast in 2020. There's a lot of these sort of what we call heterodox, sort of free thought, kind of intellectual spaces, but they tended to be very male dominated. Like, I would go to hangouts for some of these podcasters, for instance, and it would be like all dudes, and they'd be
Yeah, I
talking
saw
about,
one of your podcasts on the Unspeakable, right? That's the
yeah.
Unspeakable, the podcast, and that's on, by the way, on Substack. So I'll link into all that for everybody,
Yeah,
to all your
right.
different things.
So,
But I did see that, and it's such a different vibe, when
yeah.
you let the boys in the room, I
Right. And
think.
I'm the last person to start any kind of women's community or anything like that. That's not my thing. But I was noticing that women were having a particular kind of experience to cancel culture and this kind of censorship culture. They were often afraid to speak up. not only because they feared professional consequences, which I think, you know, a lot of people do, but they feared social exclusion. You know, women fight not with their fists, but with reputational damage. And so I was hearing a lot of stories of something blowing up in a book club, for instance.
Oh.
A Facebook group or in a mommy
with the
group.
younger group?
All,
or just
all
in general,
women.
Like across
all
the
kinds
board.
Of women.
Yeah.
No
that
matter
makes
how
more
old,
sense. Yeah.
20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, all the
Yeah.
way up, no matter what
Yeah.
phase of life they were in,
Yeah.
somebody didn't want to read Robin DiAngelo in their book club, and suddenly that person was tarred as a bigot. And even though most of the other women, you know, agreed with our woman, they would go along with the one person who was being a bully. And so I was noticing that a lot of the dynamics of the sort of mean girl in group, out group kind of middle school landscape
God, I
were
thought we were
mapping
done with
themselves
that.
on. Yeah, they were mapping
No.
themselves on to these dynamics
Yeah.
with adult women in all kinds of ways. And the result was that women were not speaking up. They were just staying quiet about things that would have been non-controversial 10 years ago. You know, perfectly reasonable opinions had just been recoded as somehow right wing or bigoted or, you know, any number of like, you know, problematic boxes. And so I thought, oh my gosh, we need a place where women can come together and have honest conversations about these things.
Right.
Not necessarily that we all agree. It's not a political group, but it's, you know, a place, you know, sometimes I call it a women's shelter for the politically homeless.
I think that makes sense, especially
And
these days,
so,
makes sense.
yeah. And so I started doing retreats, and we would go out to these beautiful places. They would bring about 15 women, and we would spend 2 or 3 days having some discussing things, you know, curated discussions. We would bring in guest speakers, and we would talk about everything from, like I said, you know, gender to censorship in the arts and public health and, you know, trust and, you know, just sort of institutions. And we've had fascinating conversations, and it has been extraordinary. I can't program these retreats fast enough. We have an online community now as well. That's a private membership base. Everything is off the record, no social media, no Instagram posing, nothing like that. And it's been pretty life-changing for people. And it's encouraging.
In
really
what aspect has it been life-changing for people?
Well, you know, the idea is not that we just get together and complain about stuff, although love to do that. But it really, you know, people have said, oh my gosh, I came in and I was able to talk about these things, and I realized that I'm not crazy and that I'm not alone. You know, the words that come up more than any other are the main word that people say is alone. I feel alone. I feel like I'm the only person who thinks these things. And in fact, most people think these things, but we just need a space to talk about them in a respectful way. So, you know, the idea is to spend a few days having these conversations and also developing tools to then go back into your real life and be able to broach these subjects and say, hey, you know, did you ever think about what this new gender movement says about gay people, for instance? Like, let's think about the ways in which we support transgender people. And obviously want everybody to be exactly who they are in the world. But at the same time, there are aspects to this movement that are homophobic, that are misogynist. There's information that a lot of people don't have. And you know, let's have a conversation about it rather than just getting hysterical and getting into a fight with somebody or running away and crying as we often want to do.
How do you do that though? Because like in your retreats, it's a group of women. Like I looked at it, you know, you can sign up. You kind of have to probably get approved so you don't have some like
I need
guy or some like,
you gotta go through me.
somebody. Right. And, but like, I think the questions somebody would ask was like, oh, is everybody like a liberal? Is everybody a centrist? I'm guessing they're not all right wing. So how do you, you know, is it like a school where you can the way they do a class is they're like, okay, well, 10% has to be A type and B type and like no, centrist and leftist.
Yeah. I mean, we have data from our online community. I think the majority of women have voted Democrat in the past, but have become disillusioned by the Democratic Party or, you know, mm-hmm. the kind of extreme, you know, a lot of this extreme progressivist, you know, we would call them, sometimes we call them the regressive left, you know, yeah. a lot of these ideas have kind of infiltrated the Democratic Party. We definitely have Republicans though. I mean, most people would consider themselves sort of center, center left, center right as well. But the mm-hmm. thing is, it's not, I mean, we have people who supported Bernie Sanders. I know we have a couple of Trump voters in the
that community. Must be kind of fun because that yeah, is a whole other is, ball like, of wax.
It doesn't, what the main thing that we keep talking about is that like these issues should not be politicized. Like right. the question of what is reality, what is biological sex, that should not be a political issue. I mean, right. even something like abortion, you know, that only became politicized in the 1980s. I think a lot of people don't realize this. This was like
yeah.
a medical issue up until the religious conservatives got a hold of it mm-hmm. in the 80s. I mean, and I can tell you, we had a conversation about abortion one time at one of the retreats. There were 12 women with 12 different opinions about it.
Really?
And we talked for about 90 minutes. And people shared their personal stories. They shared what they knew about the facts. They shared what they knew about the medical establishment. They shared their religious beliefs. Some of them, if they were not religious, they talked about that. And it was like a beautiful thing to see because they were very open to other people's ideas. And there were such mm-hmm. intellectual humility about mm-hmm. the topic.
That's a good word, yeah.
And it was really remarkable. And so that's the kind of thing we have again and again. I mean, we've talked about guns, we've talked about everything you can possibly think of. And it's just been extraordinary. And I don't think we ever talk about like who's running for office or like who's voting for who, because this stuff really transcends that.
What's the most controversial that you've seen? What's that? What's like the, as far as the subject goes, that you've really had to like break it up?
Well, we haven't had any fist fights. It's been Thank challenging. God. I mean, after October 7th, it's been challenging with Israel, Palestine.
Yeah.
We had a retreat in the Poconos, gorgeous retreat at a beautiful place. Just about a couple of weeks after October 7th, mm-hmm. there were definitely some people, you know, very, you know, there were a lot of raw nerves around that. And, you know, we talked mostly just kind of about the media response and how to think about campus activism and, you know, the surprise. I think a lot of people, especially on the left, were surprised about the sorts of politics that, you know, certain, you know, especially people in certain generational cohorts held. So it was more like that. I mean, it wasn't easy. You know, the gender thing comes up a lot. We do have a lot of women who've found their way to the unspeakeasy because they're dealing with gender issues in their families or with their kids. And also like, that's the kind of thing where you get a lot of people who are on the left who, you know, never really thought much about it. They think that the gender movement is just like the new version of gay civil rights. And so why wouldn't you support it? And then when there's a reason to delve into it, they realize that their friend, you know, their neighbor or their friend from book club sees things mm-hmm. differently, and things get really hard. So we have a lot of women come in that way. We've had a lot of women come in because of their opinions about school closures around COVID.
It's funny. That's really percolated up again because of the Fauci stuff. Like people have said, out of the blue, I'm noticing some real acid about that. And I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's very polarizing too. I mean, I think, you know, there are, and a lot of it depends on where you were living. I mean, if you were living in like, you know, San Francisco or New York City or something, and you had kids in school during that time, you had a really different experience than somebody living in Florida or Texas.
Oh my God. It's like
people were, yeah. I mean, it's been, you know, the aftermath of the 2016 election, and then of course the pandemic. I think it was really destabilizing for a lot of people who always just consider themselves on the left.
And yeah, you're kind of like, what are you guys doing?
Exactly.
I thought right. I was part of your
we
group.
We didn't mean that. Crazy. Wait, we I know. Didn't mean, that's not what we meant. Right.
That's not what I meant. Back it up. Right. What, you had one in New York recently, right?
Yeah.
Did you have a, because I was actually down there visiting my daughter when that was going on. And I was like, oh, that's close to me. Maybe I'll go. But then it didn't work out. But
yeah. So we have community retreats that are for online community members only. So that mm-hmm. was one of our community retreats. So it was a little lower key, but yeah, we had fantastic time. Lisa Sellen Davis, who's written a lot about the gender stuff. She has a book called Tomboy. She has a new book coming out about called Housewife, about the history of housewifery and its relationship to the women's movement. She's amazing. She came and spoke with us. Bartor, who's Israeli living in the US, who actually she has many areas of expertise, not only Israel, which she spoke with us about Israel Gaza, but she also worked for the New York City Police Department as
oh my God.
Social media person for a long time. So she can talk to us about the cops. So those were our guest speakers. But yeah, so that was a community retreat. And I think we're doing 8 more this year. I mean, we're going.
Yeah, I saw online. And do you go to all of those?
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's the idea. I wasn't sure because I noticed you have you have good collaboration. And I'm so jealous of your thing with, I don't get jealous a bunch, but the process of putting together a podcast with someone a generation younger is so cool. And I think so rewarding for both the people doing it and then the people that are listening, because we cruise along just thinking, oh, this is what I think. And this is my life experience from a generational standpoint.
Right.
But it's so not true the minute you step outside of your generation. I read that article. It just came up, the New Yorker one by, what's her name? Erin. I can look it up, but she's a millennial. Here it is. It's, what's her name? It was about you. I didn't think it was a particularly,
about me? Oh, no.
It was about you. It's the one, Megan Dom to Millennials, Get Off My Lawn by Emily.
Oh
Witt.
Yeah, that was a review of my book. That was review of my book, The Problem with Everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was like not I this well, may be part of the problem. You don't get it.
Yeah, I mean you write a book about the culture wars and the mainstream media is not going to take kindly to it. It was very funny. I've written for all those. I mean, I've written for the New Yorker and I think that there was it's funny. That book came out at the end of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think people were still kind of, some of the issues that I was bringing up, I think some people were sort of new to them. Like it hadn't yet occurred to them that there was a different way to think about some of these things. So it was sort of shocking, but the best headline was, there was a negative review of my book and the headline was so fantastic. It was Jagged Little Red Pill.
Yeah.
I would talk about, well, because being red pill,
I saw that. Right.
Like, you know, supposedly going over to the right, but like I would talk about Gen X and how much we loved Alanis Morissette. And so her
review
was Jagged Little Pill. So Jagged Little Red Pill was so great.
Aren't they tricky?
It was worth it for the headline alone, I think.
You're like, see what you did there.
Yeah.
I would think, now is there like a lot of laughter at your because I mean I do think, and then when people leave your unspeakable events, which I love, unspeakeasy. Yeah. Oh wait. The Unspeakable and the Unspeakeasy. And
the Unspeakable is the podcast. And it was also the name of one of my books, but yes, there
and I do get a little
under the Unspeakable umbrella.
We can say umbrella. The Unspeakeasy. Do you think people leave with kind of a list of, or like a mental list of things they're like, want to talk to their friends about and try and, yeah. Like you said, sometimes you don't realize what your friends actually think unless you're sitting at the book club and somebody, doesn't happen that often, really. You know, people stay pretty mum because they really don't want to deal with the upheaval.
What's the point of having friends if you're going to be like that? It's so sad to me. Like,
right.
What's
I just think it's true.
Having a book
I think
club. Like,
right.
What's the point of going and spending time with your friends if you're not going to have an authentic exchange with them? I mean, it's like such a waste of time and it's so sad. Yeah, no, they definitely, I think they are then able to just, even if it's like a tiny little thing, like at work, if they're just able to say like, hey, I don't think I'm going to put my pronouns on my Zoom thing. You know, just, whatever.
I do not,
I don't
I
think
never
I
have.
To. Yeah.
And then, I, no one's given me any flack about it, but I just, I can't quite understand why that's a, anybody I'm, well, if A, it's to me obvious, and B, it's none of anyone's business. Like it's sort of, you know, it's like one's religion. Like, why would I need to discuss that? Like, it's none of your business. I think that's,
I think it just kind of like takes the heaviness off of it a little bit. Like, I think people are able to leave the retreat and be like, oh, you know, like we just talked about all this stuff and we laughed and, you know, I actually can just say, you know, hey, I don't actually agree with that. And then move on. I mean, the other amazing thing is that people then, they make new friends and then they form their own communities. I mean, the online community, we have women all over the country and in, you know, other parts of the world as well. I mean, we have women in India and Australia and France. But they are forming their own little meetups in their local cities. Like, you know, our group in Denver is very active in Los Angeles. Oh. And so they then like have their unspeakeasy, you know, little local meetups that have popped up. And that's been really fun. And we also have book clubs within the unspeakeasy online community. So you don't have to worry about your old book club, you know.
That's good. Yeah, no, I always say the wrong thing anyway. So everyone's like, oh God, you know, she shouldn't have said that. And I'm like, oh.
No, you can't say the wrong thing. And our authors come and visit. We also get authors. I get the authors often to come and visit. We have guest speakers within the online community who come in and, you know, it's pretty great.
It sounds a bit like the Nantucket Project. It's which started around the same time as yours, so it's not like it was one or then the other. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
No,
but,
what is that?
Oh, it's a guy who's who I've known since I was like 18, but it turned out he became this big entrepreneur, Tom Scott, and he started the Nantucket Project with
the Nantucket Nectars guy.
Yeah. And basically I went to it this year and I wrote about it. It was mind blowing. It was like 3-4 days of just, I mean, yes, Michelle Obama spoke, and by the way, she's just, one would just wish she could run for president. I mean, she could, but she won't, which makes a lot of sense. She's pretty remarkable. But aside from that, like left, right, center, all over the place, but it's the idea of pluralism. And it's so akin to what you're talking about in that there's sort of this, the ability to, we've lost our civility, like the ability to listen, the ability to share without thinking you're going to get, you know, shouted down, both in our, in this case, it's more about the country. And it's politics and its inability to come to a centrist position to allow, you know, it's a wonderful concept. And I think that, like you were saying earlier, the noisiest is usually the smallest group.
Yes.
And this herein lies the problem. And how, I guess, maybe, you know, I wonder, you know, the press probably has something to do with giving them the platform that they convince all of us that everybody thinks this way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier to sell polarization, right?
Yeah, it's a shame.
The mushy middle. Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting too, because I mean, the women in our community, they range in age from their 20s all the way up to their 80s. I mean, we had a woman who was 80 years old, a retired physician who came to our Seattle area retreat last year. You know, they do all sorts of things. I mean, we have like, you know, CEOs. We also have like women who are in the trades, electricians and plumbers, stay-at-home moms and nurses and like small town librarians. And just, you know, to have a room, you know, to be sitting in a group of 15 women where like somebody is like, you know, the head of a company and someone else is like a small town veterinarian. It's incredible. Like, it's just such a privilege, actually. We had a woman, we did a retreat in Minneapolis, and that city is just roiling after George Floyd. I mean, that is a very, very liberal city.
Yeah.
And just what's happened there is really complicated and devastating in a lot of ways. And we had a woman who had been a cop. She had been a police officer for 20 years in that area. And she was a participant. She came to the retreat and she spoke, you know, for a couple of hours. She led it, you know, she talked, and then we asked her all kinds of questions just about what it was like to be in law enforcement in Minneapolis, Twin Cities.
Wow. Yeah, that would be something.
And you know, she explained things about what is involved in being in a police officer that people just don't realize, you know.
Right.
And that's the kind of experience we have. Like, the fact that our participants, they're not only attendees, but they often contribute to the discussion and bring their own experience to the rest of us. And it's so diverse. Yeah. I think that's like really part of the secret sauce.
I just realized, I think we're good for right now. We have 4 minutes left on this road, but how long do you think you can keep it going, or do you want to keep it going, or are you going to bring in other people to help, to spread?
Well, I know. I mean, I'm a creative person. I am not a businesswoman. I never thought I would start a women's community, and I never thought I would like be a business founder. But I'm looking for ways to scale. I mean, it's challenging because what's magical about it is that the retreats are small.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't want to start having every retreat be 100 people or something like that. Like, that would defeat the purpose. But we're going to grow in various ways. I actually am in the process of planning our first ever co-ed retreat.
Oh, yeah.
We're always going to offer the women thing is you know, definitely like the bedrock of the enterprise. But we're going to try to do, because so many men have wanted to get in on it. Like, they're
that
they're not invited. I'm gonna put together in Chicago in June. I'll be experimenting with that.
I can't wait to read about that. That'll be interesting because it's very different.
Because we're all you know, we're off the record. I don't let press
that's
in
true.
Or anything like that. But yeah, it'll be interesting, and I'll bring in some guest speakers. I'm also gonna be offering courses, writing, not only writing courses, but, you know, sort of other kinds of, you know, just kinds of courses and sort of intellectual discourse or debate or even philosophy taught by various kinds of interesting people under the umbrella. So those will be co-ed courses. The Unspeakeasy School of Thought.
Excellent.
We're building that out. And I mean, the sky's the limit. I can imagine this going in any number of directions because there's so much interest.
That's wonderful.
It's a matter of harnessing it and figuring out.
Well, we're running out of time on this one. I'd love to re-up on the other one. And this week I'll sign up for that other for Riverside, but I will definitely put online like the connections to both the community and all the blogs and whatnot.
Do you find, because I don't want to say you're courting controversy, but do you get some difficult emails or notes from people after you? I just would think you might.
Well, not from the attendees. I mean, I've
No,
never.
no. I
Yeah.
mean, like from like all
Oh,
the
in the
from
world.
the podcast and
Yeah.
I mean, I guess this just goes with the territory
You
maybe a little
know,
bit.
I mean, you know what's funny is that, I mean, I've been writing about complicated stuff for more than 30 years. So I
Yeah.
started my career as a writer in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I would kind of, you know, my thing always was that I would sort of like look at what was going on in the culture and kind of, you know, think about, well, what are we missing about this? Or where are the places where there's hypocrisy? Or, you know, I was always interested in virtue signaling before we had a word for that.
Virtue signaling. Oh,
I
that's a
noticed it
good
everywhere, right? Like I
one.
remember I always was I was very I've always
I'm
been
writing that
just
down.
very allergic to bullshit, basically. It's that simple. Yeah, I mean, I would write about things, and before there was the internet, I would write stuff, and I would, you know, there would be angry letters to the editor. I mean, there would be a lot of people who appreciated what I was saying, but there would be the letters to the editor,
Yeah,
and
the
then the
noisy
internet
ones.
came, yeah, and then the internet came around, and there would be the comments, and it would be the mean comments, and I was an opinion columnist at the Los Angeles Times for about 12 years between 2005 and 2017 or so.
Wow,
And
it's a long time.
yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, yeah, I used to print out my mean comments and like put them on the refrigerator. I mean, I've always gotten that kind of thing. But the interesting thing about it was that that was part of the job. Like if you were an opinion haver, like if you were a public thinker, your job was to surprise people or make them think or like invite them to think about something differently. And right around, you know, around 2015, 2014, I started noticing that like that was the opposite of the job, that you know, your job was to like tell your audience what they wanted to hear. Kind of like, you know, if you were in the mainstream media, there were these, you were sort of a good liberal in this particular kind of way. And it was very uninteresting. And it was just like the absolute opposite of what we were doing before. So this is such a cliche, but it's like I didn't change, everyone else changed. So, but anyway, but to answer your question, I get less blowback now because everything's so siloed. And this is not a good thing. Like everything is so siloed that like the people who read me or listen to my podcast already want to hear what I have to say. So I actually don't
You're
get
like,
enough.
no.
I don't get enough blowback. I mean, there are definitely people out in the world who have written me off and decided that I am no longer like you know, on the right side of history or whatever. But it's absurd because that's not true. So yeah, I mean, so it's a funny thing. I mean, the whole Substack ecosystem, you are preaching to your own choir,
It's true.
right? So it can be very gratifying, but I think it can also make us a little lazy sometimes because we just.
Do you think that can change? Do you think the days of journalists being objective, I'll say pre-Fox, I'm sure people could argue that,
Yeah,
the
kind of
networks themselves were more liberal, but like Walter Cronkite, was he, I kind of considered centrist.
there was a single source of truth. I mean, it's not really, I mean, there's a political aspect obviously, but it's more a legitimacy crisis. Because you know what we had back in the three network days, where there were three networks and whatever Walter Cronkite said was true. Now, was he being given information that was not necessarily entirely correct? Probably. I mean, he was being, you know, there were certain government mechanisms in place and corporate mechanisms in place and all kinds of things that were affecting what kind of news we were getting about Vietnam or whatever it was. So I don't think we should romanticize that.
It's true. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, certainly when 24-hour news came along and talk radio was huge. That was a huge thing. I mean, you know,
I
they
remember
would say
that.
about, yeah, I mean, and you know, what was also really interesting about conservative talk radio is that took off because people who were commuting long distances to work, driving, were listening to that. And so you had more people in the exurbs, not in cities, listening to conservative talk radio. Anyway, this stuff's fascinating to me, but yeah, it's, I mean, it's funny because there are, like, you know, people that, as far as I'm concerned, are stratospherically popular and have podcasts that tens of millions of people listen to a day, that, like, my next door neighbor would have no idea who they are.
Right. You know? No, I this has been, like I said, a rabbit hole, because through really digging into your stuff and then, you know, looking at some of your guests, or just, like, it's incredible. I'm like, oh my God, what do I do all day? I don't know who any of these people are.
Yeah.
Stratospheric. Like, you're like, geez, like, who? But it is, I think, I guess, because of the internet machine, and that's just people more our age. I'm not even looking at the other stuff, like older and younger. And our group is tiny. So
our group is tiny. Well, yeah. I mean, our cohort is tiny. Our Gen Xers are tiny.
Right. I mean, it's a tiny, for, you know, just is what it is. And but it just feels like it that, and I know we've completely strayed off, but you're just a wealth of information. And it's like, what happens? Like, how do we ever create an American community again without, like, World War III? You know, like, World War II was awesome for our country, bringing it back, unifying it on so many different levels, socially, economically, giving us the 50s. You know, I don't think anybody wants a World War III. Plus, we don't have the draft anymore. So we only have people that want to get paid to go, you know, they want all the goodies that come along with sacrificing themselves for our country, which is a different, a very different way of thinking. Everybody in our government doesn't serve, so many of them don't serve anymore. It's the way we spend our money and the defense budget and on and on and on. You know, you have someone like, you have people that didn't serve in the military running our country from our president on down. It seems like bad things will happen.
It just seems like everything is really broken. I mean, yeah, we don't want World War III. We don't want, I mean, it's, you know, the 50s, it's funny, like, people sort of fetishize the 1950s, like the nuclear family, all that looked like. But I mean, what people realize, that was such a blip in time. It was such a blip in time. I mean, before World War II, I mean, everyone was just kind of working all the time, and you did not have a washing machine. I mean, doing the wash, like, took all day. So it's a totally different thing.
Wash day.
I don't know the answer to this. And, you know, my podcast that I do, so just for the people, you know, just so they know, like, The Unspeakable is an interview podcast. That's the one I've been doing since 2020. Yeah. On my own. And then the other podcast, A Special Place in Hell, I do with Sarah Hader. So A Special Place in Hell is what Madeleine Albright's famous quote was: there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. So we kind of talk about how, again, that's something that gets romanticized. Like, oh, if only women ran the world, everything would be great. It's like,
no. Might be getting better, or it definitely gets better with age, I think. I mean, I have three girls who are in college right now, and it's like, no, you couldn't. I don't want to go back to that period of time. It's rough. And I think,
especially now,
I think there's a great equalizer in age and experience for empathy.
Yes.
For reality. But so maybe it's getting better. I don't know. It's hard to say. I just would love for, there to be a slowing down of jumping to conclusions about everybody and everything. But
I mean, you would know better than I, like, if you have girls that age, everything is memes. Everything is just, like, you know, TikTok. I think the majority of people in their 20s get their news from TikTok, literally. Like,
I think so, actually.
And, I mean, I don't know. I talk about this with Sarah all the time. You know, she's 20 years younger than I am.
Yeah.
And she is much more pessimistic about the future than I am. Like, she really
thinks interesting.
She thinks the institutions are irrevocably broken. She thinks the universities are past the point of no return, that we're never going to get like free speech back in these, you know, institutions, and, you know, everything from museums to, you know, entertainment world.
That's
to,
so interesting.
But the interest, but the reason is because she hasn't known any different.
That's true.
You know, like, I mean, we remember growing up in a time where, like, if you were the director of an ideas festival, you were into interesting ideas. That's why you worked there. Like, that's why you had been given that job, is because you were going to program a range of speakers that had memorable and provocative things to say. And now, like I said before, that's the opposite of the job. You know, if you are running an ideas festival, it's about saying the right things and checking the right boxes and getting yourself out of trouble and keeping yourself from getting canceled because you made the mistake of, you know, bringing on one wrong person. So, like, for Sarah, she doesn't know any different. So I think she's much less sanguine than I am. And so she would say I'm naive, that we're not going back to the way things were.
Right.
And I would say this is unsustainable.
Right.
Nobody likes this. And, you know, something's got to give. But right. I don't know where the truth lies. I don't know what the answer is.
That is interesting. The whole, that generation that basically was getting, well, a little younger than her, but was getting born or growing up post 9/11, which
right.
is a very, someone pointed out to me, just like, think about that group, what they've experienced from a world terror standpoint. We had our own stuff, but
yeah.
I mean, not to like go totally off topic, but it's sort of like you look at the boomers who had, presidents assassinated, and you know, you just kind of, and then all the other assassinations, RFK and King and Malcolm X and on and on and on, and you're kind of like, that would have been pretty unsettling, as lunatic as some of the stuff has been lately. I just held back on names right there. No one was assassinated as prevalent as guns are, I mean, by the skin of everyone's teeth, I'm sure. But still, think of that, like so many less guns in the 60s. And yet, I mean, I'm sure a million people have studied it, but it's a change. Like,
I would be very curious. I've never thought about this. I would be very curious if a major political figure was assassinated, if the younger generation would be too rattled by that. Like, I wonder if they've become
and we have the mass killings,
like schools. I mean, we have mass shootings, like we're so sort of numb to that because of the constant gun stuff. So, like, I wonder if, you know, if somebody was killed, I don't know that it would have the impact of like JFK or Martin Luther King or something like that. I mean, I remember when Reagan was shot. I mean, I was you know, fifth grade or something.
I mean, in DC, and that was pretty remarkable.
It was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, totally.
John Lennon was shot. I mean, there were just some, it was definitely, it's different. I mean, it's very different. I can't speak to it because I haven't been, I mean, I knock on wood, I haven't been exposed to a mass shooting personally. It's just, I think what we all protect ourselves now because it's like, I can only listen to so much.
Right.
Or like the news is so heavy all the time. And I, you know, there's that thing, the good news. It's like there's something.
How much do you have to pay for that subscription?
I think it's free.
I mean, but speaking of mass shootings, we had an attendee at an unspeakeasy retreat, a woman who had been in a mass shooting about 20 years earlier and injured pretty badly. But nonetheless had pretty libertarian ideas about guns. And so she gave a whole talk about just sort of her thought process and, you know, what it was like to have been, you know, involved in this horrible tragedy that had happened. and just, you know, being in the world. And you know, I think she doesn't live out in the middle of nowhere. She doesn't live in a major city. She lives sort of like in a slightly rural environment. You know, she has yeah. guns, and she's surrounded by people who have guns, and she's a business owner. And you know, I certainly didn't agree with all her viewpoints, nor did, you know, some other people, but it was fascinating.
Yeah.
You
know, like, yeah, no,
that's the kind of thing we have, you know.
I do think it's fascinating. I once was talking to some, you know, up here in New Hampshire, like my husband's like, just FYI, everyone has a gun in their car.
Exactly. So
just understand.
But not
that.
In Vermont. Why? How is that?
I don't know. And who knows? But right. There are also a lot of, you know, automatic weapons hanging around. You know, you just, that's like snowmobiles. And I was talking to someone and I was like, why? Like, you don't need them for hunting. You don't need yeah. them for anything. And the guy was like, why does a car go to 160 miles an hour? Like, why? And I was like, I don't know. It's stupid. But like, you know, and he's like, because it's fun.
I've had like, this
because they're fun. And I'm like, okay, but that may not be a good enough I mean, it's definitely not a good enough argument for me. But it opens my eyes to see how you think.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I hate the argument, but I get it.
Yeah.
It's an argument. You know, you can't, you know, I'm not saying it's a good argument. It's just, but it is an argument, not the one I was thinking of when I said, why do you have one? Because in my mind, you have them for hunting or like target practice or like whatever. And they're like, no, have you ever shot one? They're so fun.
Yeah,
like,
that's what oh. that's what they all say.
<I'm>
yeah.
Like, no.
And also, like, you know, I was very much like a city person. I was very myopic
Same.
About guns. I was very didactic about it and like or dogmatic, whatever. And yeah, like somebody said, you know, if you live out in the country, you know, and there's somebody's on your property, you call 911 and they're going to get there in 45 minutes, maybe.
Right. Right.
Like that's a real blind spot that I think people have, real blind spot.
Yeah.
So.
I think there's a very, I think it really shouldn't be so hard to have, you know, anyway, it's not for me to voice. That's not why I do what I do, which is funny. Like I do not use it as a platform for my own thoughts. It's more meant to be a motivational concept for everyone who's sort of like a woman wrote me whose career is winding down, and she's like, I don't have any hobbies. Can you write about that? And I was like, yeah, we'll get a gun. No, I was kidding. but that's where I try and steer towards. It's almost like the opposite of what you're doing in a way. So that's why what you're doing, I can tell the ladies about and the gentlemen that are there too, and say like, okay, you need some, here you go. Go over to the
some
unspeakable
hobby.
And the unspeakeasy and have at it.
we have a stitch and bitch in the unspeakeasy online community.
Oh, yeah.
They get together every week or so and knit and talk about what's in the news. So
that's right. Fun. That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you knit or do you needlepoint?
I'm not in
or...
it. I'm not in that group. Somebody else leads it.
Oh, that's cool.
It's the online community. Yeah. So, but I love it. Yeah. I don't know if they all, maybe some of them like do embroidery or something. I don't know. It's
yeah. I love it's that. Well, any other thoughts for the fans?
No, I mean, I guess I would just say to people, you know, if you feel like you're going crazy, you're not. Like everybody feels like they're going crazy, and that alone suggests that they're not. I mean, it's there's so many more of us who are sort of, you know, questioning all this dogma and the groupthink. There's so many more of us than there are of the group thinkers. I mean, I think it's crazy. Like a lot of these cancellation events that happen online, when you actually look down at the data and the algorithm, you can see that it's coming from just a small handful of accounts.
I don't know that, but it makes sense. I mean,
we're all, the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
And
like the J.K. Rowling thing, that one makes me crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I can't. I just can't.
I mean,
I just,
it's not.
I don't
yeah.
know what
I
mean, to
that,
say.
That, I mean, it really, the grown-ups have to stand up. I mean, you know,
right.
I always say, like, if the smart, thoughtful people don't speak up, the stupid, thoughtless people are happy to do the job. Right. And that's why it's so important.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes it's like the smart people are smart enough to know to keep their mouths shut. And that's why we're the room is dominated by these people with just half-baked opinions who just want to stir things up and who haven't thought deeply and are not interested in thinking deeply. And so those of us who are interested in that, I think it's, you know, it's incumbent upon us, if we possibly can, to speak up. And even if you can't speak up because you've got kids in school or you've got a job that you've got to protect, I mean, there are all kinds of legitimate reasons to not speak up. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But what you can do is find other people and give yourself permission to find people and come into a space where you can have these conversations and they can be safe and protected. And, you know, you can sort of come back into your authentic self.
Well, I can't wait to hear about the co-ed gathering.
See how that goes.
I'm guessing they will be, you know, pretty thoughtful men as opposed to they'll most likely be outnumbered as well.
I mean, this will be an experiment. So
it will be.
I'll get back to you on that. Okay.
Well, Megan, thank you so much again. It's Megan Dom. I will put all of your connections into the interview, and I really appreciate you coming and talking to the Women's Survival Guide.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm thrilled with what you're doing as well. So glad we're all in